From the Carnegie Tsinghua Center in Beijing, China, this is the China in the World podcast, hosted by Paul Hanley.
Listening to the Carnegie Tsinghua China and the World podcast, a series of conversations with Chinese and international experts on China's foreign policy, international role, and China's relations with the world, brought to you from the Carnegie Tsinghua Center, located here in Beijing, China. Today, we're delighted to welcome Dr. Chen Dingding, Professor of International Relations at Jinan University and a non-resident fellow at the Global Public Policy Institute in Berlin. I had the opportunity to meet Dr. Chen Dingding in January 2011 at a conference in Shanghai. At that time, he was teaching at the University of Macau. He has also recently founded a new independent think tank called the Intellisia Institute, which is dedicated to international affairs in China. Previously, Dr. Chen Dingding served as a visiting instructor in the government department at Dartmouth College in the United States, and a China and the World Fellow Program Fellow at Princeton University. He earned his master's in the United States and his PhD, both from the University of Chicago. Today, I'll be speaking to Dr. Chen Dingding about Trump's election and the impact of his election on U.S.-China relations and broader regional stability in the Asia-Pacific. Dr. Chen Dingding, it's great to see you again, and thank you for taking time to join us today.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul, for inviting me to be here. It's my pleasure to be here to speak with you about some of the topics I guess both of us are very interested in.
Let me just start, if I could. You know, the election of Donald Trump caught a lot of people by surprise. I think many people had predicted that Hillary Clinton would win. And that Donald Trump would not prevail. I was of the opinion that Hillary Clinton would probably win. I think I was persuaded by some of our media and some of the polling, in fact. But I did say that, you know, I was concerned that the polling that was being done was not accurately reflecting the support that Donald Trump had during the campaign. And did think that potentially the outcome could be different than we thought. Let me just start with your ability to predict the election of Donald Trump. But not only that, you said he would win at least 286 Electoral College votes. You said that one Rust Belt blue state, which one was that?
I was thinking about Wisconsin or Michigan.
Would flip to red. You talked about the African-American turnout would drop, and you said that Congress would largely stay Republican, both the Senate and the House. How did you come to that prediction?
Well, I guess it was a speculation, I mean, hypothesis, so to speak, from my point of view, before the election day. I was actually following very closely the American media, like CNN, like New York Times, like the Real Clear Politics website. It has all the information that you need for, you know, election. So I guess I didn't have any secret information or my own, you know, polling or whatever. I guess I paid some attention to some of the analysis that probably were not, followed very closely by some of the American analysts. For example, one of the articles I was very impressed by actually came from a CNN website back in August, talking about the silent voter phenomenon, particularly in the Midwest, because those areas were hit very hard before the 2008 financial crisis and after that especially. So that caught my attention. So that gave me some, confidence that we could predict the Donald Trump victory if, you know, the Midwest states actually flipped to red.
So these are the, you're talking more about the areas affected by the hollowing out of industry or losing manufacturing jobs.
Yes, and I have friends who are professors who teach at the University of Michigan and who talked about all these anecdotes about how people there were very frustrated by the policies of the Democrats during the last 8 years, so on and so forth. So those things, information, if you put them together, would give you some, you know, different views. And of course, you know, before the election, the week before the election, when you look at the polls, not the national polls, but the state polls, in those Midwest states, they were actually quite close. Right, and you know, take, you know, into account the silent voter phenomenon, then you get a sense, you know, they could actually have a good chance of flip, right, in Wisconsin and Michigan, in Pennsylvania. And plus, you know, President Obama, Michelle Obama, and Secretary Clinton, they all went back to those states in the last 3 days. For what? To defend their positions. So that tells you something was wrong there, right? And you see the huge rallies for Donald Trump, you know, people coming out of the rural areas, that give you a sense of, you know, things could happen.
Among your peers in China, China-American experts or political scientists that were watching the election, did you find you were among the minority? And how many of them thought that Trump could possibly pull out the election?
There were a few others. Interestingly, they were normally the what we call the realist scholars, actually, who thought Donald Trump actually had a good chance of winning. I didn't know what their exact reasoning would be, but I think they saw something maybe that, you know, people, how to say, with a liberal mind would normally dismiss, because Donald Trump was, you know, talking about, you know, very negatively about women and the other politicians, so on and so forth. I think, you know, in China, people probably different context than the U.S. So we normally do not pay enough attention to those kind of value issues. So they only saw the his advantages, his abilities to mobilize the voters, so on and so forth. So there were a few others, but they were not very public about this because of you know, all sorts of concerns. They they were afraid of being wrong,
right?
Which I because I know I could be wrong, but I, you know, I told myself this is a, you know, hypothesis, right? From a research point of view, it doesn't really matter if you're right or wrong. At least you know what went wrong, you know what was right. So you know the reasons behind that. So that for me is a value for doing theoretical research.
A trend, one trend that I noticed living here in China, interacting with China experts, I've talked about it and written about it, is that towards the early on in the election, it seemed that while many Chinese experts felt that Hillary Clinton was perceived as being hostile to China and pushing a human rights agenda more than Chinese experts thought was necessary, that nevertheless they thought that Hillary Clinton would be better for U.S.-China relationship because it's more predictable and she has a track record and there would be more continuity. As time went on and we got closer to the election in November, I noticed that many Chinese experts came to the opinion that perhaps Donald Trump would be better for U.S.-China because he doesn't inject human rights into issues, because he is talking about America's overreach internationally, and this might mean less strategic pressure for China at the end of the day. Is this also a phenomenon that you observed? And for those scholars that came out thinking Donald Trump would be better for China, how have they since responded since the election?
I think that has always been the case. I guess after Donald Trump won the primary, the opinion, at least the majority opinion, was that he could be better for U.S.-China relations for the reasons you have mentioned exactly.
Also, he's a businessman too, right?
Right, yeah, the businessman mentality, so on and so forth. And that has not changed until the phone call between Trump and Tsai Ing-wen.
Mm-hmm.
So after the phone call, then it went to the opposite. Everybody then suddenly become pessimistic, believing that, you know, he could be very, very bad for U.S.-China relations. I think
a Chinese phrase I heard after the phone call mm-hmm. was this "fang qi huan xiang."
Right, 准备斗争, you know, prepare for you know, struggles.
Give up your illusions, right?
Right,
right.
That give Trump up your illusions and prepare turbulence,
for
mm-hmm. buckle up, some kind of you know thinking along those lines. So I think it's been a little bit too dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense, I think we shouldn't be that optimistic before he won.
Right.
Because as scholars, probably, it's my view, of course, that I needed to pay more attention to the domestic debates within the U.S. regarding U.S.-China relations. If you paid adequate attention to those debates, you would soon realize that, like I said earlier, there was a consensus within the U.S., that the Obama administration probably was a little bit too weak, right, toward China. So either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, no matter who wins the election, it will be tougher on China. Actually, this is a view expressed by one of the American professors at the University of Pennsylvania, Avery Goldstein,
mm-hmm.
when he was attending a conference back in May in Beijing. We had a brief chat about this, and his prediction was that no matter who wins, you know, U.S. Policy approach toward China would be tougher,
mm-hmm.
not, you know, softer.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you read U.S. you know, analysis closely, that shouldn't be a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
Then again, after the phone call, I think people sort of went to the overreacted a little bit, went into the other extreme, believing that it would be very bad for U.S.-China relations. I think if you look at the domestic analysis in the U.S., it would tell a different story, because you know, all the mainstream scholars, they have come out, you know, criticizing that gambit and thinking one China policy is very actually good policy for the U.S. to maintain stability in Asia. So I don't think you know this. Well, I understand why people are worried about this phone call and all that, but my point is we need to take a closer look at the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
domestic debates
mm-hmm.
in terms of policy and discourse, so on and so forth, because they will make policies,
mm-hmm.
right? Because they are the policy makers. I think in that sense, we have a better job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need to do better mm-hmm. effort
mm-hmm.
to adequately understand the U.S. thinking.
So in your sense, now we've had the phone call with Taiwan President Tsai Ing-wen.
Mm-hmm.
We had some subsequent tweets by Donald Trump, which were critical of China's currency policies, critical of China's behavior in the South China Sea, critical on trade. And we've had some recent tweets again.
Mm-hmm.
Basically saying, you know, why should he abide by the one China policy when China is, again, raised the currency issue, the trade issue, South China Sea, and North Korea, China not doing enough on North Korea. How then now, given this, are Chinese experts and any insights you can give into Chinese leaders or the Chinese government thinking about what a Donald Trump presidency will mean for U.S.-China relations?
I think there is an emerging consensus within China that which I would agree on is that Donald Trump could be either very good for U.S.-China relations or he could be very bad. So he's not, you know, the conventional type of leader who would follow the conventions and you know closely. He's going to, you know, break those, you know, some of the conventions. So we don't know what policies he would make. We don't know what steps he would make. But I think we know his priorities. We know his principles, which is to make America great again. It's not about picking a fight with China or you know creating instability in Asia, unless you know he believes strongly that those type of scenarios would make America great again. Unless, right? And that is, you know, from my point of view, kind of hard to understand if, you know, instability would benefit the U.S. Greatly. So I don't, I'm not sure what he would do, but I think he, if he, you know, would stick to his campaign rhetorics, I think the Taiwan issue would not be a big problem. We have seen from his tweets that it could be a bargaining, proposal. It could be some kind of negotiation tactics. It's not about Taiwan as, you know, the democratic friend of U.S. Mm-hmm. It's not about values. It's not about democracy. Maybe some of his advisors, you know, take that view, but certainly not the president-elect himself. So I think that's a difference. From China's point of view, we should be very rational. Mm-hmm. We should separate his personal views from his advisors' views and understand his own views are not necessarily about, you know, challenging the One China policy. As long as we maintain that view, I think we can handle that issue in a calm way.
So I agree with you. I you know, during our discussion mm-hmm. today here at the Carnegie Tsinghua Center with at our event, I talked about the fact that, you know, he is president-elect. He's not president of the United States. We have a president. His name is Barack Obama, mm-hmm. and he has a cabinet, and they're carrying out the policy that they put together, and they will do so until January 20th. And I believe that, and Donald Trump is now putting together his cabinet. They'll have to get confirmed through the Senate, and they'll come in and they'll do their own policy reviews and put together their own policies. But given what he has talked about or tweeted to date and mm-hmm. talked about in some interviews on China, it may give us some indication of what he's thinking about doing. And talk to me about this notion that Donald Trump seems to want to hold the One China policy as a bargaining chip in dealing with China to get a better trade relationship, to get better behavior in South China Sea, to get China to stop manipulating its currency, and to get greater cooperation on North Korea. How is something like this that he's tweeted perceived, do you think, in China? Is there some, you know, viability to this strategy? Where does it take the U.S. and China?
I think people here are worried. They are worried not in the sense that he would actually do something that radical. They are worried that he would create some sort of noise that could, some sort of wrong signals that could lead to instability, right? I think people are in general confident that that would not change. I think even in the U.S. policy advisors, you know, who wanted to upgrade the U.S.-Taiwan relations do not want to go that far either. So there's a consensus. So I think both sides understand that clearly. But the worry is, you know, by sending out this noise and the confusing signals, you could create confusion, you know, drive people away from the real issues that we should care about, and wasting, you know, our energy, so on and so forth. And that's not effective. That's not mm-hmm. productive. So I think that's the worry. They don't mm-hmm. want to spend waste energies, mm-hmm. time on this issue. Mm-hmm. But if mm-hmm. you continue to do that, that's of course not good for U.S.-China relations. Not because, oh, really, we're going to see some dramatic changes in mm-hmm. cross-strait relations or U.S.-Taiwan relations. I don't think that's happening.
It tends to suck the oxygen out of the air and,
exactly.
and divert yes. attention. Well, there's a lot in store for 2017 for the U.S.-China relationship. And I want to thank you for coming today to the Carnegie Tsinghua Center to an event that we held on this issue, and also for joining the podcast. And given we have so much in store for 2017, Professor Chen Dingding, we hope you'll come back.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you very much for this wonderful discussion. And I do hope to come back for another discussion after January.
Great. Thank you very much. That's it for this edition of Carnegie Tsinghua China and the World podcast. I encourage you to explore our site and see the work of all our scholars at the Carnegie Tsinghua Center. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in next time.